What I told her was, put brands into your content for free and then watch how many brands, including those brands, start coming to you. So many creators think that they're not gonna put a brand in because they're not gonna give away for free what they do, when in reality it's the reverse. I think you have a lot of control of what you want to happen. You could DM every brand in the world and say, not will you do work with me, you could just say, I like your product, keep up the good work. You know, the stuff I do, you know how people screenshot like me saying hi? You could do that. You could say hi to the 50 brands that you think are the coolest, just literally, I'm a fan of your product, and two of them are gonna reach out to you. If nothing else, get some free samples of your handbags you like, you know, so. Hi everybody. Thank you for coming. Nice to meet all of you. Let's get you in here. Yeah. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us, Marlon.
Yeah, for sure. Look, honestly, I want to bring you as much value as possible. The biggest way I think that can happen is to answer anything that could possibly be on your mind, and I'll try my best. So maybe when you ask your question, you can give me a little context of yourself. But I'm really happy you're all here, and I hope everyone's well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anybody want to start?
Damn.
What's your name?
Natalie, I met you on your last trip to the podcast.
I remember.
Yes. So my question is just around brands. Now, you know, target a younger, well, they generally target a younger audience. As an older creator, sometimes it can be a challenge. So where do you see older creators fitting in and adding value going forward?
I think that is more perception than reality, meaning yes, but there's also a scenario that just is the reality of the ratio, because people that are over 40 did not grow up in a manner where they thought to be a creator because it didn't exist. We probably have more conversations with brands trying to reach to creators that are not of a under 35 year old demo. So I actually think that's perception more than reality. We see unlimited opportunities. We see it all day long. It just feels like that's where the media attention is, which is true and justifiable, but I don't think that's stopping your opportunity in any shape or form. Really, I don't. We see that pretty clear globally. And then I think for all of you, a lot of this is about taking things into your own hands. So I think creators a lot of times do a couple things wrong. One, they'd rather just get a manager or something to represent them, and because they don't want to do business development, which I understand. Some people are just naturally creative and not business oriented. Number two, they don't integrate brands into their content day to day enough. You know, I told something to a creator about a year and a half ago, and she emailed me recently and said she couldn't believe how right it was. She said, when you told me this, it made sense. She's like, I didn't realize how much sense it made until I did it. What I told her was, put brands into your content for free and then watch how many brands, including those brands, start coming to you. So many creators think that they're not gonna put a brand in because they're not gonna give away for free what they do, when in reality it's the reverse. So I think you have a lot of control of what you want to happen. You could DM every brand in the world and say, not will you do work with me, you could just say, I like your product. Like, keep up the good work. You know, the stuff I do, you know how people screenshot like me saying hi? You could do that. You could say hi to the 50 brands that you think are the coolest, just literally, I'm a fan of your product, and two of them are gonna reach out to you. If nothing else, get some free samples of your handbags you like, you know, so I think, I wouldn't worry about that, because it's not true. Brands are more and more trying to reach all ages, all sizes, all shapes, all demos.
I'll ask you a question. So I'm Sherry, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Maybe I'll provide some quick context. So I actually kind of wear two hats, I suppose. The creator hat is YouTube's my main platform. I do it for fun. Don't necessarily have the intention to do it full time, because what I actually spend most of my time on is, I actually have a startup called Roster, so we work with creators a lot.
Makes sense.
And so basically we're a recruitment platform for creators, anything around video editors, thumbnail designers, script writers, producers. And we're actually just in our infancy stage right now, wrapping up our angel round pre-seed. But the question I have for you is, obviously you've built a very successful company, many lines of businesses across many different areas. And for us right now, like for someone who advocates for creators to hire and outsource, because the creative process is very personal to what you do.
Yes.
It's really difficult to be like, I want to hire a video editor. Right now, the only option is Upwork and Fiverr. And if you ever tried hiring someone on there, you know that it's like swimming through an ocean trying to find someone good.
Of course.
So I always advocate for creators to like try to find the right people, obviously, and outsource it, because you can't be the biggest bottleneck of everything you do. But equally, it's actually really difficult for our company ourselves as well, as such an early stage company, to figure out the right time to hire. So it's more of a business related question.
Good.
So from a content production question,
yeah,
which is, you obviously have US operations, Asia, US is our primary market. But how do you think about hiring and scaling your team? And obviously opportunity costs and your time is worth a lot. You need to make sure you hire at the right times. But I've also seen an equal amount of companies that have hired quite stupidly fast and unnecessarily as well. Any framework
yeah.
that you use?
Yeah, it's a great question. I appreciate it. So things have gone so well for me as an operator for 25 years. I started to get very passionate about like, what am I doing different than, or what are other people that are building companies consistently doing that I do? There must be some unlock to that truth. And it's funny you brought this up. A lot of it has to do with hiring. And so the framework I currently believe in the most is hire fast. But this is where your insight to hiring fast and stupid is true. Hire fast, fire faster, and promote fastest. So let me break that down for you. The biggest mistake that people make is not hiring aggressively enough. The problem is too many people are logical and they know they're guessing when they hire, which is true. I have better intuition than 99% of the world, and I've hired nothing but tons of bozos my whole career. It's hard, because it's not a real environment. You're hiring, every person you hire is putting a show on for you. Do you know I've never called a reference in my entire career? Why would I call the people you told me to call to see if you're good? Like, as if you're gonna give me somebody who you fucked up for. Like, hey John, how's Susan? She's terrible. Like, you know? So hire fast, because you're gonna need to hire. You're growing, especially once you raise some capital, right? Fire faster. Sometimes you know in a day. Sometimes, and you don't want to do that to someone. So what I started doing was being upfront. I'm like, hey, what you could do is say, hey, we're hiring. I just want you to know my philosophy. We hire fast, we fire faster, we promote fastest. So if you're bad, Johnny, you may get fired in a month and you may not want that on your resume. So are you sure you want this job? But hey, Johnny, if you're good, you may get promoted and hire your replacement in 6 weeks. And so I think as long as you're transparent and upfront. But I think most people don't fire fast enough, and the number one mistake that people make is they don't promote fast enough. You hire a star, and you're like, she's a star, but you're gonna wait a year to promote her because you're trying to save money, but she's a star. If she hears from you in, you know, if she hears from you in 7 weeks, hey, you're getting promoted, all of a sudden she's someone that's gonna wanna work there for a while. And that's what you have to do at a young level, because you have to build your team, your family. Your first 7-8 people is everything. Yep. It's why I believe in hiring friends. A lot of people are like, never hire friends or family. I fully disagree, I'm the other way. Again, you have to be upfront with them, like, hey, best friend, you might stink, and like, your friendship matters more, so should we do this? Because this could, you know, you have to over talk, but that's what I think you should think about.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Gary. My name is Kristen.
Nice to meet you.
For this year. So a little bit of context for you.
Please.
You're currently studying in medical school, so
yes.
I'm year 3.
Yes.
I'm also a content creator as well, so juggling both sides.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've been watching your stuff for like about a year, and I want to say a like huge thank you.
Because thank you.
I think online, not many people can call me out like that. I think you're super real with your content, so
thank
really
you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
I have like a whole bunch of questions. So I'm trying to see which one is like suitable, but I think what's really relevant for me now, and also a couple of creators here as well, doing things myself and alone right now.
Yes.
So for the past year or so, my numbers have like gone up significantly.
On which platforms?
Instagram and TikTok.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've heard you talk a lot about, you know, posts, reels,
yes,
Facebook and all that.
Yes.
So I put that to work.
Yes.
And seen the numbers grow.
Good.
About 3,000 last year, about 100 over 1,000 now.
Yes.
Yeah, so seeing that growth, I'm thinking about taking the next step. How does that look like? Some things I have in mind, going back to YouTube, long form, how does that look? Because for me, I'm studying medical school. I don't have like the most time to pull up, like what you said, 10
yes,
reels a day,
yes,
that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Right, so I try to be more effective. I try to make
yep,
every reel count.
Yes.
Right, and then now it's the next step, right? I'm at 125K now. I want to take the next step. How does that look like? I can make YouTube videos. I started on vlogs actually. I started doing long form actually, but I stopped and I started focusing on reels. Now I'm considering going back. I can, but every time I do a YouTube video, it takes me 10 hours, but I can do 10 reels for that. So, I mean, for businesses as well, both creator and a business, right? Would you advise doing long form? Is there still a place for long form content?
There's always a place for long form, but everything's contextual. Given the fact that you're committed to medical school, you're the last person I want to make long form.
Okay.
Right? Because the truth is, to your point, you answered it before I got a chance. Not only does it take you 10 hours
yeah,
versus doing 10 posts, the results are not even close.
Mm.
Now you have a base so you can drive them to the long form. So unlike a year ago where you would only get 47
yeah,
or 470 views, now off your 125, you could get 10,000 views, but it's still small
yeah,
compared to the awareness that you can get from your reels. I believe in long form the most, but I also believe in being practical to the reality of your situation of the moment. If you told me you graduated from medical school and you're willing to take a gap year to figure out if you want to be in the medical field or be a creator, then I'd be more excited about you doing long form because you have the time and you should go all in to decide. But in your current state, I think based on the way you told the story, you just like long form, that's why you started with it first.
Yeah, but also, I feel the long form helps me build a deeper connection.
100%.
Right?
100%.
And with that, for a business, it helps to whatever, tell a story and all that. So I'm thinking, like, does the next step necessarily look like 200K for me, or does it look like a deeper community, you know?
I would go with 200K.
Okay.
Because I think your width is not that wide yet. Like 125K can a lot easier be 540K in a year versus 120K with long form might be 200K and deep depth, but the depth can be added at any point. And if you add depth to width later, I'd rather you start depth with a million base over here, because you understand?
I got it, yeah.
You don't have the capacity of time right now to make such a commitment to long form that eats up so much time.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You know what you might want to consider?
Yep.
Vlogging through stories.
Vlogging through stories, okay.
So one thing that I wish I did, that I just don't do, that I should do,
yeah,
is vlog through my stories.
Okay.
I think vlogging through stories continues to be a huge opportunity that a lot of people don't take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
People are using stories a lot of times to drive awareness to other things, but I actually think it's a storytelling platform within itself. And I think vlogging through stories might be able to scratch your itch with tasting a little depth while creating far less need for production value for it to be capable. It's even easier than reels. It's just vlogging through stories.
Mm.
Something to think about.
Okay, so you mean like posting on IG, like
stories? Yeah, whether IG, whether, I'll be honest with you, I think Facebook Reels is such a big opportunity for all of you that nobody's seeing. So maybe you're like, oh, okay, Gary said that, and I don't want to fuck up everything else I'm doing, but I'm not doing any Facebook Reels anyway, so I'm just going to vlog through Facebook Reels. You know, I mean just vlogging, like literally actually vlogging the way that Casey Neistat, you know, I came along and created a different format when Dustin used to be D-Rock and I was being filmed. That was a new genre of someone following you. Before me though, it was Casey and others actually vlogging with camera in hand. I think with an actual camera like Dustin's, I now think the camera in hand as in your actual iPhone vlogging, and so you're putting out 71 stories on Instagram and it made a whole story that day as a vlog, is a humongous white space that more people should be doing.
Cool. Right. Thank you.
Or on Snap.
Snapchat.
Mm-hmm. Which is very, very, very underpriced attention in Asia, because a lot of people aren't doing it, thus the opportunity is there, because a lot more people are using it than people realize.
Maybe I'll go next. Hi, Gary, I'm Adrian. We met like 27
years
ago. So I mean, again, a bit of context just in case you
forgot. Yes.
A little bit of my background. So I run like a media company where we empower creators across the region. I think, you know, one of the key, you know, talking points this year is ChatGPT.
Yes.
And AI.
Yes.
And I think how is it going to change the game for content creation of the future?
Yes.
And I mean, 5 years ago, you were really talking about podcasts and
yes.
it really became like a thing.
Yes.
And now AI is like the new kid on the block.
Yes.
In town, and I want to kind of get, you know, your thoughts on, you know, how AI is changing the game for content creators. And
I think AI is underrated against its hyperbole right now. I don't think people have really wrapped their head around how big of a technology it is. I mean, podcasting's a pimple on AI's ass. It's a big deal. I would say many things. One, every one of you should be playing with it. Midjourney, you know, ChatGPT, you need to just taste it, because it's like, it's almost as if this was 1997. I was like, you should just be on the internet. You should try it. Because it's gonna be too big for you to avoid it. Everybody in this room, everybody watching in this camera, will be massively affected by AI for the rest of their lives. It's only gonna get more significant, not the other way around. So I think first, all of you should be just playing with it. Second, I think it's gonna help a lot of people. Like, I can write effective blog posts every day. Right now it's hard for me to block written copy. I have somebody on my team, poor Mackenzie, I'm sorry Mackenzie, she wishes I would talk to her to make blog posts, but I don't. It's just too hard. I don't have the time for her to interview me. With ChatGPT and things like it, I'll be able to write an entire meaningful blog post by recording. ChatGPT, I want you to write a blog post on why I think Snapchat in APAC is a good idea for influencers, especially if they do beauty. And like, I can like talk for a minute and a half, hit enter, and basically just send that to my team and say, just edit a little bit and have a meaningful blog post every day, all day long. Then there's also the creative variable. Your thumb, Mr. Beast spends $100,000 to make a thumbnail. Mr. Beast spends $100,000 plus on thumbnails. Long form YouTube. Do you understand that in 12 months, you can say something smart into a generative, creative AI bot that will produce a better thumbnail than any day of the week that Mr. Beast can come up with for 100,000? Like, this is profound. So what do I think? I think it's gonna completely change the world. I think every one of us, me included, and anybody else who thinks a lot about more than I even do, are grossly underestimating it. It's gonna be exponential, and I think everyone here needs to take it serious because it's a huge opportunity. You're welcome.
Here, can I ask you a question?
Please.
I'm so sorry, like, this is super cool. Everybody here has like amazing questions. They came prepared. I'm a big fan. I've been following you for like 5-6 years now.
Thank you.
A lot of the content that you've put out really shaped the way that I look at life, from gratitude perspective, values and all. Because of VFriends, I started my journey in Web3, got the Capable Caterpillar, which I eventually lost due to a scam.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Held it all the way till it reached like $80,000. But just want to say, my name is Yang Raja. I'm a rapper, musician from Singapore, signed to Def Jam Southeast Asia, Universal Music. I've been making music for about 5 years now. And ever since I got signed, like I got signed at the very beginning of my career, so I never really got to explore
right.
What does it feel like to be an independent artist.
Right.
And from day one, the challenge has been, how do I keep putting out music that aligns with the label's plans and at the same time build my personal brand? Because the personal brand is the thing that brings in the cash, like all these like campaigns on Instagram,
of course,
paid posts and whatnot. In Singapore, we don't get that many opportunities to make money off the music because of Spotify. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's like that everywhere else, right? What advice do you have for artists like myself that are trying to push the personal brand on as many platforms as we possibly can without feeling like we are forcing it. Because I do find myself feeling like, a little overwhelmed with what I have to keep up with TikTok and Instagram and Twitter and all these different platforms that you gotta like stay up to date and stay relevant, because I feel like all these people are following me, but if I don't post, I feel a little guilty that I'm not creating the engagement and creating the discussion or the buzz or whatever.
Well, I mean, that goes back, excuse me, to the things that, you know, the lovely words you said to me when you started, which is, as someone who's listened for 5 or 6 years, this is not gonna seem foreign to you. What I'm about to say is, well, if it feels overwhelming or guilty, like, you don't have to. You know, like, the reality of all of this is, if you can't do something that genuinely makes you happy, it's not gonna work out anyway. If you're doing it because you know you should be doing it, because you're trying to build a career, but it's not enjoyable, that is not a sustainable model. Ironically, my piece of advice is to maybe take a break, which seems like a complete curveball for me, but to me the concern is, if you're doing it for the money, if you're doing it because you're like, well, if I'm not top of mind, someone's gonna come, right? That comes from a place of fear. It comes from a place of defense. You need to find joy in it, right? And so one of the things I think a lot about is people are always trying to make content that they think will work versus making content that they want to make. It especially concerns me with people that, like, you know what I get a lot of questions about is people that grew because they're attractive and they no longer want to post naked pictures. Not fully naked OnlyFans, I mean just like like guys with abs or girls that are wearing barely any clothes, like, you get, you like that one?
Yeah, it's gonna add on to like my next question.
Okay, good. So you know, it's a very common question, which is like, I'm now 27, I built 4 million followers because of who I was as a 22-year-old, I don't wanna do that anymore, what do I do? And the answer is always like, stop doing it. Like, you know, this, you're asking a very similar question with a slightly different tweak, which is, it's not gonna work if you don't like it anyway. So maybe there's other things you could be posting, which is a thing that everyone should be thinking about, which is, like, when I didn't want, like, I built my career in 2006 on YouTube making wine videos, and then I didn't want to, and everyone said I was crazy. And when I stopped making wine videos and started making business videos, everybody in the wine business told me that I was making the biggest mistake of my career. Because that's all I was known for. I just was building a wine business. I was one of the most followed and like understood people in that era. And people are like, what are you doing? And my comments were like, why are you talking about business? Just stick to wine. Like, what are you, like, but it didn't even cross my, like, I started over, my engagement, my view, all started over. But I knew it wasn't gonna work anyway. You need to find something you want to do. Like, you need to post things you want to talk about. You know, otherwise you can't be sustainable. So what do I think? I think you have to make this work for your soul. Because if you don't, it's not gonna work out anyway.
Well, I really enjoy what I do, but it's, how do I have to choose a certain like platform and then like just lock in with it, or just?
Look, my answer to this question are two extremely opposites. My answer is everybody at this table should be posting as many times as humanly possible on every platform. Comma, and I just told you that maybe you shouldn't post for 3 months. You have to be self-aware of what you're about. To maximize commercial success, you need to post on everything from LinkedIn to TikTok to Snapchat to Facebook, stories, long form, short form, audio, written, all of it. The amount of humans that can achieve that are almost none. It's hard. You could though, but let me give you another example. There's a lot of people at this table and around the world that make a lot of money doing this and should spend it by hiring 4 people so they can make more of it. That's what I did. Instead of keeping the money and buying a fucking Bugatti, I hired people and made it bigger. So like, everyone has to decide what they're doing here. That's what you have to do.
Okay, thank
you.
Got you. Okay, I'm gonna go for the next question. Okay, hi Gary. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
Like everyone else here. I've been following you for many, many years.
Thank you.
Well, following your podcast. Actually my question, interesting that Young Raja actually came out with this question, is kind of the opposite. So I've made a career for myself out of doing personal training. I started as a fitness trainer when I was 18. I was on YouTube and then it evolved to a show on YouTube called No Sweat. It's the first fitness show in Singapore, and then I created an app out of it called No Sweat.
Good for you.
And it was great during the COVID period because people were working
out from home. Yeah.
So that was great, and I feel like I've built a lot of my personality and my brand around fitness and wellness. Funny, I've always loved music, and my passion has always deeply been to do music and to be a country artist.
I love it.
Very random. Two different extremes. That's but cool. I love country music, and I've always been, so I was a personal trainer in the morning, and I go to uni, and I'm a singer in the evening. So I just kind of did both things, fitness and music. Now, like since last year, I've realized that I really want to delve into my huge passion, which is to do country music and music. So I started putting out my own originals. And what I feel and my fear is that my engagement will drop, which I feel like for when I start putting out music, people are like, what is she doing? You know, like, why is she putting out country music? First, she's like, you know, in the gym, like working out, you have like rap playing. And then on one hand, I'm like here, like playing the guitar and singing like a love ballad, which I love. So my fear is diluting the brand. And I think to add to this question, like, we love both things. We love what we do. We love content creating. I think that's the thing, that like, we just love too many things. How do I do it? What's advice for someone who wants to rebrand but also doesn't want to dilute their brand?
Can I also
or dilute their audience?
That she's downplaying herself. She like sings and she went on the Michael Bolton competition, which was regional.
Yeah.
And she won.
It's awesome. So I make content about business. I make content of me going and buying things at garage sales. I make content about me in corporate business environments for entrepreneurs. I make content about NFTs and Web3. I make content about the New York Jets. I make content about eating blueberries. I think that people are incredibly not kind to themselves. You know, like, the thought that this, to your point, even if you weren't great, people would just love you more if you were an average country singer, because people like people, not just for one thing, but humans have gotten too philosophical. Even the fact that you said, I don't want to dilute the brand, humans now think of themselves as product. You literally just sat here and said, I don't want to dilute the brand, talking about yourself. And I don't think that's bad. I think it's an insight to, I understand how you're thinking, but the strength of a human being that is much stronger than Evian is that you're not a brand, you're a human being, which means you're 9 brands. Your strength is that you're 9 brands, not it's your weakness. The problem is everyone has become so addicted to a metric on a social media that they are accustomed to getting, that it's stopping them from their happiness. People are not striving for their happiness because they want to get an average of 7,000 likes that they're accustomed to. They don't have the courage to get 800 likes but be happy. So just be happy. Right? Like, if you think about it, so many of you have wanted to post something else, but you knew it wouldn't get good engagement. Think about how fucked up that is. Right? Meanwhile, what you don't know is it's probably the best thing you can do to eventually get to double engagement. Mm-hmm. You just have to have the courage to be fully authentic in the short term, but it's so good. I desperately hope that people figure this out. And it's been a core strength of mine. My content is all over the place. My Instagram grid doesn't look the same. You never know what the fuck I'm gonna get from me. You really have no idea what's gonna come out of my mouth. Of course, there's things I'm consistent about kindness or work ethic or thing, but like, you know, like, here's NFTs now, and when I'm ready, I'll talk about AI, and you know, like, And so I think you have to allow, all of you have to allow yourself to be yourself. It is where your strength is.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Gary, quick question. My name is Ethan, I'm a content creator. I've been creating content around food for the last few years.
Food.
I listened to your podcast on the Diary of a CEO.
Yes.
One of the most impactful things you said was your self-worth and identity is completely detached from your your professional accomplishments.
Yes.
And you sort of based your what's your self-worth based on? I think you said something about how your self-worth is predicated on how you interact with another person.
Yes.
So as a content creator, a lot of what we put out is ourselves.
Yes.
And I imagine for you as well. How do you make that detachment and how did you land that conclusion?
It's a great question. So what you're saying, I assume, is when you as a content producer put something out and someone is shitting on you or it doesn't perform well, how do you let that not affect you?
Yeah, for someone like immensely successful as yourself,
yes.
How do you say like, I am not my business, I'm not these companies that I built myself with, it's nothing to do with that? And you've given an alternative answer, which is that my self-worth or my value is in my interaction with the one-on-one, the person in front of me.
Yeah, because it's my truth. Mm. You know, to answer your question, it's because the reason I think I'm successful is because of the second part. Mm. You know, I mean, I think all of us have to really recognize who we are. You know, for me, I genuinely am more passionate about being a nice person than I am about being a successful businessman. And so like, but I just happen to be also good at business. Like, she just happens to be capable of singing. That has nothing necessarily to do with her capacity of being an entrepreneur and building a fitness app. They're just all these different dynamics that we all have. I think what was powerful about what I said on that podcast was I also knew that a lot of people would be listening to it. And it's been something I've been thinking a lot about, which is like, why am I so capable of being happy so often? Why don't I have the normal amount of anxiety when I have the rationale to have way more anxiety? When you're being judged at the level that I'm being judged, when you are 47 and have lots of dynamics in your life at that point, like there's a lot going on in my life, and yet it's just all so quiet. And so you start asking yourself why, and it's how I got to that conclusion. I'm like, oh right, I just don't care. I don't care that I'm good at business. I don't think I'm special. This is all very nice, and it feels incredible to have people say nice things, following, like, but I don't think it makes me special. I just don't. I think that's good parenting. I think that's luck of DNA. I think there's a lot of things going on there. But I can tell you that the faster all of you can get there, the happier you will be.
How late did that come for you, or how early?
It came so early.
Really?
Notice how I said the reason I think I'm sick. It happened before high school. The reason I liked high school so much was I didn't give a fuck what people thought of me.
Yeah.
That's really hard. Like, it seemed normal to me. The reason I was such a good businessman was I did business instead of trying to be popular. I did business instead of trying to get good grades. You know, I was just in a very funny place my whole life. I was just always willing to be, I was always, you know, the only thing I think I'm actually great at, like truly, is being myself, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think like for all of you, it's back to what you just said, like if I could wish anything for all of you besides health, it would be deep self-awareness. Because once you know who you are, you can actually start to navigate the world outside the framework of the world. This is why I talk a lot about buying watches and like, most people buy shit to project, not because they actually like it. They think they like it, they don't understand the bigger meaning. They like the affirmation. They like the attention. They like the validation. They don't actually like it. They force themselves to like it as a proxy to get what they wanted.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, yes.
So I'm Cheryl, I own many hats. I help run a family business, I run my own brand. I'm a mom of three.
Wow.
I incidentally have been creating content as well. So something I've learned from you is to love the process. So that's something that's kept with me for many, many years. So two questions. One question is, I think sometimes we overthink, or rather, how do we deal with content fatigue?
Yeah.
I think, be it for business or for personal content creation, because my interest is in wellness, is in motherhood, is in you know, health. But then again, I feel like I put all these out there, you know, or like maybe my previous eating disorder, I put the, all these out there. But how much more can I talk about it again? Because I've said it, you know, so content fatigue is one. And the second question is relating to, you know, I think, you know, being happy, right? Like having so many hats, I feel that sometimes it's very overwhelming and it's very stressful. How do you kind of just have all these, yeah, this quiet and all this noise?
Two things. So the first thing, on the content fatigue, the question I would ask all of you is, who are you making the content for? My belief is that most people are making the content for themselves and what they want out of it. The reason I don't have content fatigue is because I get great joy out of making the content for all of you. So for me, I'm capable, and my friends ask me this all the time, aren't you tired of saying the same shit over and over? And I'm like, never. For example, for some of the people here that have been consuming my content, I think this will resonate. There's been things that really, if you think about the three best pieces of content that I've ever made for you, I bet you you'll realize once I say this that you had heard me say it 19 other times prior to that. It was just that you were ready to hear it that time. So for me, when you've got as powerful of a story that can help so many young women, like actually being vulnerable and authentic about having an eating disorder, you could talk about that every day for the rest of your life, because you know on the other side, there's some girl in Stockholm right now that needs it. So for a lot of you, content fatigue comes from the fact that it's selfish, not selfless. That's not bad. I have plenty of selfish wants and needs too. But I think the reason you can easily get to a place of not having content fatigue is similar to what resonated for you about loving the process. Once you make all of your content for the sake of the person on the other side of it, you'll never stop. So that's one place to think about. The second one's ironically the complete reverse answer. The thing that you need to do with overwhelming is to be kinder to yourself. With all the hats that you're wearing, especially mothering three children, all of us beat ourselves up too much. That's where you need to be very selfish. The place where everyone needs to be the most selfish is in the way they love themselves. The way things are quiet for me and not overwhelming is I'm my biggest fan. But not in a narcissistic, egotistical way, in a I'm compassionate to me. You have to be nicer to yourself. We're human beings. Every person in here is gonna do something stupid today. I think I'm really good at stuff, business, I'll make it narrow. I think I'm really good at business, I'm gonna make 150 big mistakes this year. Having the capacity to be kind to yourself and predicated on your effort is everything. You know, and that doesn't mean don't hold yourself to a standard. That means just have more compassion to yourself. You're juggling a lot of shit. Family, business, brand, three children, and content creator, you've got a lot going on. You're allowed to have a bad hour. You're allowed to have a bad day. You're allowed to have a bad week, month, and you're allowed to have a bad year. We just need to be nicer to ourselves.
We've got time for maybe one more quick question.
I'll go a little faster.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Hi, Yuri. I'm Toby. So
Toby.
I'm not exactly a content creator. I'm an artist from Singapore. So I painted a mural outside in your office. So that's by me and Aida, an employee of yours. So I think something I realized along the way after I've done art for the longest time is that when I first started doing art on Instagram social media, it didn't get very far. It was just like a portfolio. And when I started to realize that social media is after all social media and posted myself doing art, things really took off from there. And I think that's also partially because of you and the stuff that you shared. And I think brands just noticed that and starting to do a lot more brand collaborations, more content creation as well. I work with brands, creating art for them on products.
It's cool. Campaigns.
So I think one question I've been asking myself more is that art is how I got started and the thing that I really love. But at the same time, with the content creation, I still do enjoy that as well. But I'm struggling, I guess, to a certain extent to find that balance between the two, something that I really love doing and
yes.
I want to keep doing.
Yes. Right? Yep.
And content creation. So.
I think you need to fight more for the love and not the money. That's it.
Okay.
The reason you're struggling is you recognize the commercial opportunity, but you only have so much capacity and it's taking away from the thing you like. And this goes back to a lot of the theme of today. Just, you have to understand balance is subjective and not true. There is no balance. There's your feelings and opinions on balance. So it just sounds like you need to tweak it a little bit back to a little more time for you to do art. Like, for example, you can make a simple rule for yourself that no matter what, on Monday, coming out of a weekend, to get the week going right, you do art. The world made up that we work 5 days a week and have 2 vacation days, but you can make up that you have two weekend days, 1 art day, and 4 work days. You just have to create the framework that will work for you. Right now, based on what you're saying, is you're starting to hit that inflection point where you realize the commercial side of you is eating into the, you know, the essence of you, and you just need to find a little room for it.
Right. Thank you.
I think my question is actually
go ahead.
Similar.
Please.
But it's just that I'm always stuck with it. Sorry, I'm Yais, anyway. I'm a photographer. I do study unconventional photos. Like, I don't just shoot. I shoot creative architecture photos with like humans and stuff. So it's like I take my craft as pride. Also.
Yes.
So I always get confused, not confused, like stuck in between like content, like the craft that I do, and also the trend that people actually do.
Of course.
So for example, like, you know, I do photography and I'm an advocate for mobile photography because I shoot a lot of mobile and like, you know,
yeah.
People always think like otherwise, like, oh wait, you should use on mobile phones and stuff. But the thing is, it's like there's a lot of tips for mobile phones that I know myself, and the trend is always like to teach people on photography tips. But the thing is, like, I'm always stuck in the nuts. Should I post my craft, or should I actually post reels on my photography tips?
Well, what do you want to do?
Well, I kind of like always like to post the craft, but in like posting wise and in carousel posts doesn't always work as good as like photo like.
I'm aware.
Reels.
Yep.
So it's like I'm always just stuck. Like, you know, should I just post the craft, or like should I actually do like
so the
a lot of like trend setting, which give me numbers, but just putting.
I understand. Like, I understand. The world, for some fucking reason, the world is addicted to the word or. And so much happiness can be found in the word and. The answer to your question is both. Right? Like, think about how simple that is. It's like, should I do this or should I do this? What you just said. When the reality is, the social media platforms in the world is this whole table. You can easily do both. There's room for all of it. You're not compromising one or the other. This is where people got into silly scenarios where like, you better not post this because it's gonna fuck up the algorithm. Remember that? Like, it's all silly bullshit. Both. This is why a lot of what I just talked about is gonna work. You're not gonna, you wanna post a country song and then the next day a workout video? Good. Like, the capacity for and is unbelievable.
I think in the sense where like the trend, like, you know, photography tips is like, if I keep doing that both, like, I mean, my craft and photography tips, like, what sets apart for me and other creators where actually they also post the same thing?
Why are you worried about the setting apart? What's gonna set you apart is you're different. We're all set apart, right? To your point, it's a really interesting question. The amount of people that do things because they think in scarcity, not abundance. You believe that you doing something similar to other people does not have enough capacity for both of you to eat. I think everyone's doing the same shit. There's 7 million people doing the same shit you're doing. Every one of you. There's thousands of people that wait for me to post something and just make their own version of it an hour later. And it's still not taking away from me. It drives my team crazy sometimes. They're mad at people, but like, yeah, there's no scarcity in that. You understand?
Thank you.
Yeah. Even like, you have to understand, like the adjective you use in your copy, like the adjective that's different than someone else's adjective already makes you different.
Thank you so much, everyone.